Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa.
Thanks for bringing us on the air, Mike, and welcome to our listeners. Your hosts for today are Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen.
What a busy week between solstices past and now Christmas Eve is tomorrow. What can we squeeze in besides Christmas music?
Well, Christmas music is great for radio, but beyond that, there are the gaiety of lights, tradition, and caring for others, to say nothing of special clothing.
You think we can get the stories about all those things in 1 hour?
If all our guests are here, we will. So let's start with the first annual Christmas Lights Contest, launched by Nevada Masonic Lodge number 99. We have a couple of lodge members with us today to introduce us to the event and why it's taking place this year. Welcome to Josh Vaughn, Junior Warden, and Joe Wakeman, Secretary of the Lodge. Hi, both of you.
Morning. Good morning.
So, how have you gotten the word out about the event? Besides the front page articles.
We just mostly did word of mouth on and Facebook. We have a lodge Facebook account, and we also have a website, which is www.nevadalodge99.com, and that has all our events and the Christmas light display on it as well.
Well, who is eligible to drive vote? I guess the way you pick the winners are the vote people who vote. But I imagine people besides Nevada will want to come through and see these.
Yeah, anyone can vote if you can come and look at the house. I mean, we're welcome to anyone voting and having their opinion on who has, in their opinion, the better house of Christmas light display. So if you have access to the links, because to vote, you have to get onto the link and vote. Joe, you want to explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, so if you just go to our website at NevadaLodge99.com, right there on the homepage, there's a big button for the Christmas light contest. You can click that. And then there's a map that's got all the locations. We've got 8 in Nevada and 1 in Colo. And then below that is also a link to vote, so you can vote for your favorite house. And like Josh said, it's open to anyone who wants to vote for these entries. So we definitely welcome you to drive around and hopefully we don't get some bad weather today, so it's still a good day to drive around. But yeah, drive around and see some of these awesome displays. We've got some really great entries, and vote for your favorite.
And when is the deadline for the votes?
Great question. So the deadline is 11:59 p.m. of Christmas Eve. So we just have a couple of days here left in the contest. And then what we'll do is we'll tally up the votes, and then we'll do a Facebook Live on our Facebook page on New Year's Eve to announce the winners.
Well, I noticed in the paper, and congratulations on getting the front page coverage. That was...
Yeah, we got some. We didn't have a lot of time to plan this thing when we came up with the idea. We just had about a month, so we kind of wanted to just not go crazy with publicizing, just being our first year for the contest. But we got some pretty great coverage here for not trying super hard. So that's awesome.
And it mentioned the newspaper article mentioned that people could get information on the radio. I understood this is. What kind of a radio is it, and how do people get it?
Yep. So one of the houses actually has a radio transmitter. So their Christmas light display is synchronized to music. So when you drive up to the house, they've got a sign out front that says tune your radio to whatever station. So when you tune that your radio to that station, it's playing the music that the house is broadcasting from their little transmitter that's synced up to the display. Of their Christmas light. So, like for example, it's one of the songs is a Trans-Siberian Orchestra song. So you can tune your radio to that song and or that station, and then you can hear the music live that's synchronized with the Christmas light display. So you get kind of a really cool experience other than just some pretty Christmas lights, but it's actually kind of a neat little show there that you can see.
And I noticed, like I think you already said, all the houses except one are in Nevada, and one's in Colo?
Yep, that's correct. Eight are in Nevada, and one is in Colo. When we opened up for entries, we opened it up for anyone, it doesn't even need to be a Masonic member, but we opened it to anyone in all of our communities that we operate. So we've got our lodge in Nevada, but several other Story County lodges have consolidated into Nevada. So we represent Colo, Cambridge, Maxwell, Zeering, and Collins. So what we really wanted to try and do was have homes from any of these communities that we represent be part of the contest. And we had the one from Colo, and hopefully next year we get some more from some of those other communities.
Did your decision to do this have anything to do with alternative events during COVID?
That's one of the things that started the conversation. Some of the members of the lodge wanted to try and find some other ways just to get the lodge's name out there, be represented in the community. We've got a pretty long-standing and successful pancake breakfast that we've done since 1989 that raises money for scholarships. And we wanted to, this year we wanted to try and figure out other ways we could be in the community and be represented and do good work in the community. And then it kind of started off with, okay, yeah, this is a little different times with COVID. What can we do that is COVID friendly? And then
we did talk about doing a drive-through Christmas light display, getting a bunch of other places in Nevada to join the lodge and do one big light display. And when we started talking about this, it was a month before Christmas, so we didn't think we could pull it off a month before Christmas. So this is how we came up with the, well, there's a lot of people in town that decorate their own house. Maybe we just do a map and have them go drive around and look at it. So,
this is the first, and you obviously from your publicity are expecting to do this from now on.
Yeah, we really wanted to kick something off, especially right now with COVID, just to give some people something extra that's exciting and fun to do that's safe. But yeah, we've gotten great publicity, great feedback from the community, as far as the event goes. So I think it's something that we want to continue. May look a little different next year when we've got some more time than a month to plan, but, right. I think it's something that, the events committee at the lodge and the lodge as a whole, are excited to continue.
Well, in the article, I was interested that this lodge is so old. When was it founded?
Yeah, so we were founded, the Nevada Lodge 99 was founded in 1857. So 3 years after Nevada became a town, we were chartered and founded as a lodge, which from all of the research that we've done and have kind of seen represented, that would make us the oldest fraternal organization in Story County.
Well, I would think so. And where's your building?
So our building is downtown Nevada, right in the Main Street District. The address is 101 6th Street. We've got a building that's just kind of kitty corner from the Story County Administration Building, and then we're up in the second floor.
So has this been your home since you were founded? What
building? It has been our home since the early 1900s. I want to say like 1902. We've been in that same building. We've occupied a couple other buildings kind of around that same area that were destroyed by fire back in the late 1800s. But we're proud to call our current building home for well over 100 years.
Well, so this has some history to it, even though it's a new tradition.
Absolutely. That's something that we all kind of strive to do, is maintain the history and the proud tradition of the lodge and come up with some new things as well to just be represented in the community.
Well, you mentioned that you had a successful pancake breakfast. Do you have any other events planned?
Josh, do you want to kind of talk about some of those?
Yeah. A couple years ago, we started a cornhole tournament, bags tournament, whatever you want to call it. The first year was held by the lodge. Last year, we didn't do it because of COVID. And then this coming spring, depending on COVID, we would like to do the bags tournament with a little spin on it and have a food truck competition there as well. That's one of the events that we're trying to become every year. Then we're trying to go for each holiday we do an event at the lodge. So
yep. I don't know. We're kind of looking at we've had a couple of those, you know, the pancake breakfast and bags tournament, and we've got a little kiddie train for the Lincoln Highway Days, the celebration, town celebration in Nevada. But like Josh said, we're looking at adding a few more offerings to what we can do in town. We're looking at in the spring as well, partnering with Runners United Nevada, a group that puts on several 5K and 1 mile runs in town. We're looking at partnering with them for a run in the late winter, early spring, Nevada Masonic Mile or something like that, that we can just another thing to just do for the community and get out there.
Well, and how many members do you have working on all these things?
So our committee, our events committee, is four members. So we've kind of done a lot of the legwork for the logistics of some of these things, but the lodge itself has a membership of 114 members. So really it's a team effort when we put on a lot of these events that we may kind of set up the stuff as the events committee, but then the brothers in the lodge will step up and.
Well, thank you both.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
In case you just tuned in to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where your host, just a minute, I wrote this wrong and I read it wrong. In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where your hosts are Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen. We've just heard from Josh Vaughn and Joe Wakeman, officers of Masonic Lodge number 99 in Nevada, which is sponsoring Nevada's first annual Christmas Tree Lights Contest.
We have selected our next guest to honor outstanding volunteers who saw needs in their community and responded to provide institutions for making food and clothing available to local people. Our first guest will be Gil Peterson, who is retiring from the Nevada Community Cupboard, and his co-worker, Ron Weber, will show just what was needed to keep involved, to keep it going.
So, Gil, could you tell us just how the Nevada Community Cupboard got started?
That was started during the farm crisis by Joanne Hunt. Super Value is mid-80s, farm debt crisis, and she saw the need, so she opened it in... rented out of various church basements and one thing and another, and I became involved in like May 1 of 97. When I started, it was in a square house that had had the furnace removed, heated it with space heaters. The church added on, which was owned by the Catholic Church, and the church added on to the church in 2005, and then the current location has been there since then. It's in a garage at 1110 11th Street.
And you're open just one day a week?
From Saturday mornings from 10 to 11:30.
How did you decide to do this?
Due to circumstances beyond my control, I started bleeding internally, and before they found it, corrected it, it severed all my nerves. And so I had to find something else to keep myself busy once I was motivated enough to do something else. It came for this, and so I was chosen.
So you had worked for Hertz Farm Management before that?
Yes, I'd worked for Hertz Farm Management for 1977.
So this was your retirement from your retirement, is that right?
Yeah. Retiring from all my extra jobs I've been doing to keep busy. I've been financial secretary at the Methodist Church since 1996, and that and the cover both are not what you'd call full-time positions. I can do them when I feel like, you know, if I'm not feeling well, I don't have to be there every day. So I worked out real well for me in retirement. And then starting with the tax year 2001, I started doing AARP taxes in this, every spring. And yeah, like I said, one other thing too is like volleyball and basketball games, I run the scoreboard at the junior high level.
Is it just a matter of slowing down or just something happened?
Well, I broke a hip in 2018, but I'm over 70 years old, and it's just hard to get around in the winter. And we have decided that we're going to become snowbirds, and I didn't want to have to try to have someone else do my job, and then I still get paid. Or that was the main thing. I just couldn't see that have someone else do something if I'm not there to do the work myself.
But you're a snowbird, but you're not leaving Nevada completely.
Not entirely. Right now we're just planning like three and a half months away. We bought a place out in California, so we're going to have a place to stay and have a place where the kids can come visit if they want to come out on vacation themselves and for spring breaks. I guess I'm also, it's a smaller job at the Methodist Church. I'm the Nevada Food at First. I'm the financial secretary for that. I write the checks for that.
We had a program last week about the Food at First in Ames. So could you tell a little about the Food at First in Nevada?
Well, it's actually kind of patterned after the Ames one, just not on the scale, but they are doing it. We're open 2 days a week for meals, Monday and Thursday nights. You call in by 3:30. We used to serve them, you know, on site. Right now, with the COVID, it's all carry out. But you call in by 3:30, and they have it ready to go. So when you pull up, they bring it out to you, and, you know, it's a very slick operation. Doesn't take you that long if you're one picking up the food. And
about how many people do you have?
Well, I suppose most of the time it ranges from 100 to 150. When we had it on site or come inside, we had somewhere around 50 to 60. It's really expanded. People like to take out aspect of it or the delivery aspect.
And are all these organizations supported by several churches?
In essence, yes. Because the various groups used to come in and serve or fix the meals. I don't know if they have as many groups as they used to have just because of the COVID. But like one of the meals, like the one served Monday, was by the Girl Scouts. They came in after school and made the meal and got it ready to go by 5:30. But all the churches have some sort of a connection with that, yes.
It sounds like Nevada is very concerned about his people.
I've been very thankful in my 23 years. It's been a blessing from that standpoint that they have supported us really well. I don't have to get up every month and say I need money. It comes in. So,
thank you for all that you do.
I have to thank the community of Nevada.
Well, the very unusual thing that I'll tell you is when I started helping Gil a couple of years ago, if you would have told me that there was a number of people in Nevada that needed food that are coming to the cupboard, I would have probably said you're crazy. I didn't realize there was a need. The need is there as much as it is.
And now that Gil is retiring?
is at the cupboard this morning, and I just heard that they have hired somebody. But I'll continue to help them out as I have with Gil. I have enjoyed what I've done. It's given me something to do. I'm retired, so every Friday my mornings are pretty busy. And then usually I'll go in maybe one day out of the week and organize a little bit and get some facts ready, that sort of thing.
Thank you to Gil Peterson and Ron Weber for demonstrating how volunteers can make a huge difference in their community. We'll leave Nevada now and turn to a teacher in Ballard High School, Jerry Ann McLaughlin, who saw a need for clothing. Thank you for being with us today, Jerry Ann.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about how the Ballard Clothes Pantry got started?
Well, to back up a little bit, I've been at Ballard for 30 years, just recently retired.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Had nothing to do with COVID, but at the same time, I guess probably was fairly good timing, huh? Anyway, 30 years ago, when I moved here with my husband and four children, we were new to the community. We practiced volunteering quite a bit anyway. It was something that's kind of been instilled in our family to begin with. So anyway, I was hired at Ballard, and I don't know, I just got to know a lot of the locals and kind of saw a need. And I had a situation happen to me when I was trying to buy a Halloween costume where a family couldn't afford what they had in a shopping cart, and they didn't speak very good English. And so the person that was selling it to them, you know, said they didn't have enough money. Well, anyway, long story short, I came home and I said to my husband, I'm going to do something about that. And I did. And so in 1994, I took a couple students with me to the city council, and we spoke. We had no money, you know, we just had good intentions. And so the city of Huxley gave us the old fire station to operate in. It wasn't by any means desirable. It was hot in the summer, cold in the winter. And so anyway, long story short, fast forward about 7 years, and Ballard Creek was built here in town, which is a wonderful retirement center. Mm-hmm. And they called the high school and offered the storage space out in the garage area because they weren't using it all. And at that time, our superintendent, Mr. Crum, was real supportive of all the programs that I was doing. And so he offered that to me. And so I had spoken with him, and the next thing you knew, we were over renovating several of the garage spaces in Ballard Creek, which is part of the Madrid home, ever since 2000 has welcomed us with open arms and let us operate there free. They pay the utilities, and there's no money, you know, or anything exchanged. But I do have volunteers every month. What I do is I have a different church or the RSVP program or some community group that help. They help me during the open hours. And so we are open 3 days a week. It's been that way since 1994. We're Saturday mornings, 10 to 12, Sundays, 1 to 3, and Wednesdays, 4 to 6. We do several projects throughout the year. They are things like, we just finished up on the Wishing Tree project, where we helped over 60 families here at Ballard with gifts for their children. We do school supplies. I give away food. We just have any number of projects. If there's a need, we do it. That's kind of what it boils down to. I have a real supportive community. And the fact that I worked at school for so many years, and I did credit recovery, and service learning, mentoring, tutoring, things like that. And I worked with, you know, the population that was a little, a little lower income. So I know all the families quite well. Gotten to be very good friends with all of them.
I'm sure that helps a lot.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful arrangement, and our community supports it so much. We really are blessed with a wonderful, I call it a well-oiled machine now, and that way I have myself and others that volunteer in the off hours go over. It's kind of like, I always say, it's like working at the Buckle or anywhere. There's always something to do, you know. There's things to pick up, things to, you know, hang up. There's just plenty to do. So that's kind of the short version of everything.
And how do you get all your donations? Do you have like certain days when people can bring donations, or?
They come when we're open. When we're open, people have come to know I have a Facebook page, and I tell them just to follow me on that. I am closed when it's a holiday weekend. for instance, this weekend, you know, we're not open after Christmas. And so, you know, they've kind of grown to, you know, I get a lot of phone calls. My phone number's out there, always has been. So, like I said, our community just knows. And it kind of helps that I've been around here a while and I've kind of become the clearinghouse. Some people will call me if they have a couch or if they have a dining room set or if they have, you know, so I do connect a lot of people with a lot of things. So I guess I'm just kind of that in-between person. So I'm very lucky.
That's terrific. You're like a good networker. Connect the couch to a needy family. And
very much so.
Yeah. Wow, that's terrific. Mm-hmm. And you've been going how long?
Well, in 1994, so we're at our 26th year here.
Wow, that's amazing. So you started it right after you started teaching almost.
Right after I came to Ballard, yes. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm from Western Iowa and I went to a Catholic school. My kids went to a Catholic school. We kind of had that in our blood anyway. We did a lot of volunteering. And so, you know, it just, and at the time my children were all home and, you know, and my husband and I and the kids pretty much ran it the first 6 years. Cause like I said, the location wasn't the most desirable. And so it wasn't quite as easy to get volunteers. But once we got to our new location, I spoke to every church in our four towns and spoke with every group that I could possibly speak to. And they all got on board. And ever since it's just wonderful because they take the same month every year. So, you know, it's really nice. They just plan on it. You know,
oh, wow. That's really nice.
Yeah, it works out really, really well.
The whole community in a number of ways.
Yes, it's very, very nice. And like I said, we just finished up with a large project called the Wishing Tree. And I mean, that's always widely, you know, accepted and people help so much. It's just incredible.
Is that just for toys or anything?
It's anything. What happens is families come in from our community. They have to be, you know, in the Ballard school system or birth through 18 is what I say. And they come in and fill out a wish list, put it on a tree. And then the community members come in and they look at the list and they take the one home that they want. They take the whole family. And so they come back and it's a mitten deal. So the family who filled out a wish list takes a mitten home and the matching mitten goes on the tree. And so then when they all come back and the mittens come back and everything, the matching mitten is on it. So when the family comes get their gifts, all I do is match up mittens. It's all anonymous.
That's a neat idea.
Yeah, it works really well.
It makes it simpler too. You can just match your mittens.
Right, right. Problem is, we have to have unique mittens though.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I was thinking of socks too.
And I do. When I run out of mittens, I do use socks. One year, not too many years ago, we did have a problem. We had a high school senior boy get some newborn diapers.
Oh my goodness.
That was a situation. We got it fixed, but it was a situation where we had two of the same mitten, and I'm like, oh, that shouldn't be. But that's we got it fixed. It's okay.
So do people take furniture to your building as well or mostly just clothing?
Well, if we can fit it in there, I can take small furniture. But I do have a bulletin board that we post things, and I one of our builders here in town has donated a storage unit to me. And which is another community thing. Here a while back, we had a stove donated. So I took it and I didn't have a home for it immediately. But then about 2 weeks later, I got a phone call. Somebody needed an electric stove. If I get a bed frame, anything, if it won't fit in there, I can put it into the storage unit that's donated to me, you know. So anyway, so that's, and that's a really nice, thing from and I'll tell you, it's Bella Homes here in town. Yeah, I mean, they're just, I like to give kudos to those who, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they build a lot of houses.
Yeah, yeah, they support me and give me a storage unit. So, anyway, it's very nice.
Oh, that's terrific. That's terrific. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure you made a lot of Christmas folk or people happy this Christmas for... gifts and all sorts. What do you do in January as far as the different months for the events?
Well, January, to be really honest, I've kind of spoken to a few different groups who have been supporting me and doing things. And, you know, I always say this, that it's wonderful to to help folks during the holidays and all of this. It's wonderful. But also I'll try to instill in people's mind that the need doesn't quit on the 26th of December, you know. So a lot of groups have gotten on board to they're supporting me, like with food and things like that. And the food component is a new thing. We're not competing with food banks, nothing like that. It's just that for a long time, I had to run the school's food pantry out of the clothes pantry because we could not get in the school from like March until August. And then I retired. But our community has gotten so supportive and stuff that they keep donating. So it's really nice. We have a wonderful selection of food. So anytime families come in those 3 days, they can pick up food too. And so I have a group that donates meat. I have a group that, you know, I mean, they just give me, you know, just anything, and whatever I get, we give away. So, you know, so that will continue greatly in through the winter months. And especially with things like, you know, your electricity bills are higher. I mean, people are struggling, you know, to put gas in their car. I had a group give me several gas cards. So I was able to give out gas cards to families, just any number of things. Another group was wonderful. I talked to them about, changing oil in people's cars. And so they gave me several free oil changes, you know, that I could give to families. So just, you know, whatever I think of, it seems to appear. I don't know how, but it does.
Well, that sure is terrific. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. You guys all have a happy new year and happy holidays and all the above.
Thank you so much. You too. And stay healthy and safe.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
All right.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you are listening to Local Talk with hosts Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen. Gina has been talking with Jerry M. McLaughlin, founder of the Ballard Clothes Pantry. Our next guests are here to tell us about the Wearable Design Show, which will start this Saturday, December 26th, and run every day, I think, a different show until December 31st. We have a couple of members of the team with us today. Please tell us what it's about and who you are.
First, I guess we'll start with an introduction real quick. So my name is Nathan Edwards. I'm an associate teaching professor from the Department of Art and Visual Culture in the College of Design at Iowa State University.
And I'm also here. My name is Rachel Moylan. I work within the College of Design as the event coordinator. And then in the Wearables Design Show, I am their strategic manager.
Yeah. And Patience Luth, an associate teaching professor of architecture, is my co-director for the show. And she is the director of Design Studies 102. So she is a major supporter of us as we move forward with this project. And so I'm going to start off with talking about, well, where did the Wearables Design Show come from? So the Wearables Design Show started back in spring 2019, but how it came about in the previous semester was in the previous semester of fall 2018. And I attended as a guest reviewer in a Design Studies 102 studio for the project that influenced the Wearables Design Show. At that time, it was called the Mobile Project. Our colleague, assistant teaching professor Ramon Chekornets from the Department of Architecture, invited me to join his afternoon studio for the review of his students' wearable mobiles. I had an overwhelmingly positive experience reviewing student work and remember telling Ramon after the review a vision I had of how it would be wonderful to show these works off to an audience in an exhibition of wearables. This is where the idea sparked to evolve the project into what it is today, the Wearables Project and the Wearables Design Show. And so about 4 months later, in April of 2019, the first annual Wearables Design Show was presented in the atrium of the College of Design to an audience of 200 plus guests. And over 200 students were involved in making the show a success, where 54 wearables were presented in the exhibition. And these wearables focused on the show's broad theme, modular mobile, where student teams investigated how their wearable designs can interact with and be designed for the human body, such as kineticism or movement and material fabrication, while working from concepts that evolved from analysis of music and sound.
Well, what about the pandemic and the quarantine? How did the project morph to adapt to the situation that we're in currently?
Yes, well, the planning and preparation for the Spring 2020 Wearables Design Show was well underway by the time the Wearables Project was introduced to our students. And the virus was on everyone's mind at this point. And by the time we dismissed for spring break on March 13th, we had already completed 2 weeks worth of the four-week project. Over break is when we learned that we would not be returning to the studio classroom, but we were prepared with our contingency plans that we had spent a few weeks prior developing in case of this situation. And so returning back to our new virtual learning spaces, I know that a few of my colleagues chose to have their student teams complete the project by continuing to work together virtually to make one wearable, but I can't speak to that experience. So for example, in my own studio, I had each of my students complete their own modified version of a wearable that evolved from the work their team had already completed in the analysis and concept development phase of the project. And each team continued to communicate ideas and review each other's work via small group meetings with me virtually. This allowed teams to remain connected, allowing them to receive continued constructive feedback while completing their individual interpretations of the wearables project in our new virtual classroom situation.
Well, can you tell us about the release dates and how we can access them? Where do we go to view your wearables?
So for the 2020 Wearables Design Show, we had to pivot. So we worked with a videographer and a music developer to come up with a new virtual showcase. So this will be the first time that we are releasing everything digitally. It will start on December 26th, so only 3 days away. Everyone mark your calendars. And we will release one video a day up until New Year's Eve. So each day we will highlight a different wearable who participated in the 2020 virtual showcase. So on the 26th, you'll receive, you can check out our website or our Instagram, the College of Design's Facebook. We will really just blast it everywhere to make sure that you guys get to see the 2020 virtual show. Our Instagram handle for anyone who wants to follow along is at wearablesisu. That's at WEARABLESISU. On there, we will release a new wearable every day, so you will never get bored. You really get to see the creativity of our students really shine. And that's really what we need in 2020. We need to end it on a positive note.
You've already given some of this information, but it's hard when you're, listening, maybe working around the kitchen or driving to get this down. Now, we will put this show, today's show, up on our website. And so I would like you to send me the links and I can post them. And then people, could they see it directly from our website if we post the links?
Sure. That would be absolutely incredible.
Okay, well, I think this is very exciting, and it's a very exciting collaboration.
Absolutely.
But it's new meaning, and see you again on the radio.
Well, that would be wonderful.
We're really excited to showcase our students. Although they did not get the typical runway show, We're hoping to highlight them in a unique and special way. And hopefully in 2021 or 2022, we'll get back to the regular experience.
Well, actually, it sounds like more people could be reached this way.
Absolutely.
And of course, this is a good time. This is this is the after Christmas, before New Year's letdown. And it's also, I would think it's, now, are your students actually doing these things live, or have they been videotaped already?
So they were pre-recorded in order to make sure that we could adhere by all safety guidelines. We did pre-record everything, and Nathan actually was a part of that video shoot, and I know that he could speak about it.
Yeah, we worked with our grad TA for Design Studies 102, Jacob Martin. And he is a major supporter, and we could not have done this without him, because he's been responsible for leading the editing of the video. He helped with recording the students who met with us on campus back in early September when we pre-recorded everything. And so we've been working with him over the past several months, pulling these features together. And we're really excited, and we're always looking for the positives, especially within this year, of what are new things that we are learning. And video editing, creative video editing, is something that is helping the Wearables Design Show to expand. And like you said, Susan, it's going to be able to reach a wider, broader audience than just in the atrium of the College of Design.
Is any of this filmed in the atrium?
This year, none is, but in spring 2019, you'll see that on the Wearables Design Show website, that we do have a link to the recorded show that happened in spring 2019. We worked with Roger Suski, who was the videographer for us at that time, and did a wonderful job that way. And so a lot of new skills, a lot of new ways of exhibiting student work has been blossoming over these past couple of years. And so this is a good step for us, even though it's been a challenge for sure.
Now, I'm a little unclear, maybe our listeners are also. So were the works from 2019, did you do new things this time, or did you just find a way to show this?
So it works a bit differently. It's very strange to talk about years in terms of academics, because we kind of straddled 2 years. So the 2019 show, as we like to call it, because it happened in 2019, actually showcased work from the fall of 2018 and the spring of 2019. So it was two different kind of groups of students who created wearables to showcase in the spring 2019 show. In this show, which we're talking about, the 2020 show, it kind of hit right in the middle of the pandemic. Students were working on their wearables up in March, and all of a sudden they were told they will not be returning back to campus. So we gave them the option that they can complete their wearable, as Nathan talked about earlier, either individually or as a group. And then we told them that somehow we would showcase it. In total, over the summer, I believe we had around 30 students who were still interested in showcasing their work. We all thought that we would be back on campus in September and we could still have a show and kind of give these students the traditional Wearables Design Show experience. However, we all know that that is not the case, and we thankfully were able to all complete a semester at Iowa State. However, it was on part physical, distant, and a hybrid of the both. So we gave students the opportunity. Of that, 5 students came back, which we are so excited to have those 5 students. They're really incredible. On our website right now, you can kind of see a little snippet of what will come Saturday. And they're truly great. So when we say the spring 2020 show, it's any student who wanted to still be involved from the fall of 2019 to the spring of 2020.
Does each student have their own individual wearable or some collaborations?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question because this is the main team project for this particular class. And so we do have one team project from fall 2019 where two out of a team of four, two students continue to participate within the show. And so their project is the truest version. Well, all of them are true, but to the original way that the project runs in the semester because the pandemic had not affected the semester back in the fall. However, the other four projects are in some part a team effort. So for example, I have a few students who are from my studio who are participating in the show. And like I had said, the last 2 weeks of the project, we were not returning to the classroom. And so they were working off of development that their team had done together. But moving forward on their own, they developed their own interpretation, but it all was able to be sourced back to their teamwork. So in a way, it's an individual project for the spring students, but it's also a team project in some way too.
Can you describe any of these wearables?
That's one thing that we are always amazed by year to year. I could not describe for you, maybe Nathan could better, how these wearables are. They are breathtaking and creative. Last year when we held the first wearables design show, nobody truly knew what to expect. We told and publicized people that we were going to give an opportunity to first year design students to showcase their creations. And people were a little skeptical. They didn't know what that meant. And we truly blew them away. But it wasn't us. It was our first year students, which is incredible in its own right, that these are students who have only had either a semester of design training or almost a year. And their creativity and entrepreneurship and innovation was just outstanding. Nathan, I don't know if you can describe any of them this year. They're beautiful, though. We're so excited to showcase them.
Yeah. So some of the basic instructions that students receive on what their project can be is to consider the human body and to think about scale and to think about fabrication. What kind of materials are they using? And how does it speak to the sensation of movement, of kineticism? This project actually starts with the analysis of music or sound. And so they might be listening to a classical work or the sound of rain. How do they study music? How do they study sound? How do they create visuals? How do they create visuals that evolve from what they hear? And how do they start to construct these visions? So we try to really push them to think beyond their first ideas. This idea of iteration is a major part of the culture of the studio. So if you think in your own mind's eye what a wearable can be, and if I'm your instructor, I would challenge you then to begin to evolve it and to apply it to the music and push it further. Don't just settle for your first idea. And so when we start the project, students may have an idea of like, oh, I want to do this. But our goal over the few weeks that we have with the project is to really kind of mix and blend and evolve. And there's always some way to link something back further and further, but we never really know where we're going to end up. And that's what's really exciting about the design process. There's some expectation. There are some basic rules that students have, but in the end, you may have something that resembles great big wings or something that is elegant and graceful, and the colors that we see and the types of the way that students work with materials is there's really these beautiful and dramatic things that happen. So it's always a surprise, and I think that's part of the rewarding process of, at least on our part, of getting to observe what these students are doing in this first year studio.
So where did the idea of wearables come from? I mean, when I hear it, I think, oh, a fashion show. These are clothes. Is that at all right?
No. Well, of course, there is the fashion show at Iowa State University. And so as I had mentioned, attending a review for my colleague back in 2018, I was in a hallway for a few hours reviewing these creations, these wearables. And I was like, we need to be in a different place showing these off. We shouldn't just be in this hallway because these are too spectacular to hide. And so this right away, I was thinking, okay, how does this happen? How do we make this happen? And so bringing this up to Patience, Patience is amazing because she's an absolutely amazing director because she's so supportive of ideas. And she's a big believer in not just talking the talk, but walking the walk. And so right away, we got the ball rolling. And then Rachel got involved as well, because we went to her asking, where can we have this at in the college? What space is available? And so at that point, the three of us formed a close, tight-knit team. And amazing things started to happen from that point back in the spring, early spring 2019.
And so I can hardly wait for your links so that I can see what you send me.
Absolutely. We like to tease everyone just enough to pique their curiosity. And so now to figure out what we're talking about, make sure you go view the show.
Okay. Well, and I guess this is one of the things that has developed coincidentally with the pandemic is people are much more used to using and accessing media.
Absolutely. When toying on what to do and how to showcase everything, video and showcasing virtually kind of was at the top of our list. And we're so thankful that we put together a team with John and Jacob that they were able to really pull this off. We are kind of the outward facing group, but the behind the scenes group is just incredible. And we're really excited to showcase that work right in the nick of time, end of 2020. We can all relax. December 26th through the 31st, we'll give you something new to look at every day.
What a great beginning for 2021 that we all need. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you very much, Susan.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Rachel Moylan and Nathan Edwards. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today have been Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen. Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Community Radio's mission is to build community through grassroots communication. We welcome all voices and celebrate diversity in our community. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI comes in part from the Body of Christ Church, inviting you to their outdoor candlelight Christmas Eve service. There will be carols, candlelight, and community to safely enjoy Jesus' birth under the stars this Christmas. December 24th at 5:30 p.m. at Tom Evans Park in downtown Ames.